So nowadays, card brokers is definitely weird. You know, we really had to sit down and think of a switch, obviously, because we can't just provide target monitors and do this kind of stuff. You have to really think about what the next move is. So something we did for a while was we actually started doing more than cards.
This is Good Sell Us, a podcast for collectors who want to learn how to sell the cards they don't want so they can get their hands on the cards they need. In every episode, we uncover the secrets collectors use to move their cards so you can sell more and sell faster. Let's get started.
Hey, this is JB. I'm the CEO of Stack and your host for this episode of Good Sellers. Good Sellers is brought to you by Stack, an app where you can run and launch Stack sales directly from your phone. Using Stack, collectors will claim what they want from your sale, and then Stack will automatically reconcile who claimed what, send out your totals, collect payment, and create the labels so that after a sale, all you have to do is hit print and drop your package at the post office. Stack is set to launch in mid-2023, and for any and all information, visit stacksales.io and subscribe to our mailing list. Communication between collectors is huge. It's one of the reasons that I try to be so active on Twitter. I learn stuff constantly, find things to buy, sell, meet people who collect similar collectibles or cards or whatever. But as great as social media and Twitter and things like that are, within the collector-to-collector communication, there are also micro-communities that you may not see. Sometimes there are group chats within these apps like Twitter or Instagram, or sometimes they're bigger than that and entire Discord servers. So today I have on Zach Meadows, or as a lot of people will recognize him, Z-Med. As a serial entrepreneur myself, I've found Zach to be pretty interesting for years. He and I were communicating about grading in bulk at PSA when, Zach, I think you were still in high school.
Yes.
We're talking, you know, via DM, and like, I think it was like 2018 or 2019, about sending literally thousands of cards to PSA and just kind of taking advantage of some of the perks of being in early and on the PSA train. And then I saw on Twitter that you had launched during the boom, I think, or you can kind of tell me about it, but that you had launched your Discord server, Card Brokers. So Zach is the owner of Card Brokers. I believe you're the founder. You're the one who came up with the idea, but again, you'll elaborate, which does a variety of things from channels with cards to buy or sell. There are channels for insights on cards that people think are going to go up and go down. And then, of course, the most talked about was getting collectors and flippers alike access to cards right as they dropped from places like Tops or Target, especially during the boom when things would go out of stock within seconds. So this rubbed some people the wrong way and helped tons of others. I personally had a chance to rip products like Prism, Optic, and Topps Chrome during the boom that I otherwise wouldn't have had access to if it wasn't for being in the group. Anyway, I want to get into all of that today. So without me droning on any further, Zach, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So let's start out. So for the audience that doesn't know what Discord is, can you just talk about Discord itself and then how you're using it for card brokers?
Yeah, so Discord's like, I mean, it's a giant platform, and it's mostly used, I'd say, for, I mean, a big variety of things. I think it started off more of like a gaming platform, actually. Like, people would, if you're playing video games on a computer, you would, like, talk to other people on Discord. But it's used, a lot of businesses even use it, like, just to keep track. There's, like, you can make all kinds of channels in there, which channels have, like, different, you can talk in the different channels. And then eventually it kind of evolved to, like, you can sell a product on Discord, like a subscription, and you could sell access to a Discord pretty much, which turned into lots of different things. Obviously, there's a lot of directions you can go with that. It was big in recent times. NFTs were giant on Discord. All NFT companies like were pretty much based on Discord. Like, if you were getting information on the NFT, it was Discord. Let's use it to sell information about securing sports cards and profiting through sports cards. But yeah, it's pretty much app on your phone. It's on the computer too, obviously. And it's just a bunch of different categorizations with a lot of software features too. Like, you can incorporate bots and stuff into it. And it's developed a long ways. And there's just like a lot of different uses for posting information, and stuff like that. Similar to like Slack, if you know Slack. It's like a more developer type version of Slack.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say for our more corporate audience.
Yeah.
It's very, very similar to Slack. I was a longtime Slack user from some of the early days of Slack. And I remember seeing Discord for the first time and being like, all right, so this is like fun Slack.
Yeah,
this
that's literally what it is. Like it's fun Slack.
Gaming or cards or whatever it may be. I mean, I use Discord all the time to play, like, you know, me, my friends were like in our 30s, right? And we grew up playing video games and we're all like all over the country now, you know, having families and moved around. So we all just like get together on Discord, jump in like a channel and, you know, play video games for an hour or two when we can find some time. I mean, that's how I mainly use Discord. So there's a lot of different ways that it can be used. But a big thing that we've seen within the hobby is people selling access to Discord servers that will help them hobby in one way or the other, whether that is a buying or selling channel, whether that is getting information like what yours is used for a lot. So how did you decide that Discord, actually, let's just even take a step back. How did you decide that card brokers should even be a thing?
Yeah, so I started off, I used to resell sneakers. Like, I feel like a lot of card guys hate to hear that. They kind of hate that side of the card world, but I did start off selling sneakers. I don't know how long, maybe like 7 years ago. And I was in Cook Groups. Cook Group is pretty much a Discord group with monitors on websites like Nike. And a Cook Group resells limited items, mostly sneakers is what it was known for, maybe Supreme and like streetwear type things, but pretty much make profiting by reselling items that sell out quickly online. So I was doing that for a while, and I was into sports cards my whole life. My father got me into it when I was really young, so I'd always been into sports cards. But then I was like a sophomore in high school, and I started reselling shoes. And I did that for a while, and then these groups will like hire people to provide information about certain niches because everybody's good, you know, everybody has their niche. And my niche was sports cards, and nobody was really reselling sports cards at this time. But I started providing information to groups, and this was like maybe like 2018. So cards hadn't like really went through the boom yet. And
yeah,
I was charging them like, I don't, $50 a month or something to talk about sports cards in the group and how you could make money through. Retail flipping wasn't much of a thing yet, but it was, the timing was phenomenal when it all comes down to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, investing in sports cards, stuff like that. So I started doing that, and I get a lot of groups, and I get a big name in the sneaker world and on Twitter mostly. Everything on Twitter, actually, because that's mostly where like Cook Group stuff was based off of. So I eventually launched Card Brokers, and I was successful out the gate because I'd already had a following through providing information to all these groups. And then as I launched Card Brokers, it's 2019 basketball, and pretty much the whole, like, the boom starts as I'm launching the company. Everybody's wanting into cards. I'm the only group providing card information. So, I mean, it was a little bit of luck, obviously, but everything just worked out perfectly. And it was successful at the gate because I already had a name for myself. I really wanted to get out of cards, and we kind of blew up quick. And people were making a lot of money. That's the other thing. People telling their friends about it and stuff, because, I mean, you're securing hundreds and hundreds of boxes of limited retail products, for example, that you're buying for $20 a blaster box and selling it for $100. And you're buying hundreds of them at a time. It's like people are making unhuman amounts of money early on as we're launching. So it was a perfect start.
Yeah, for sure. It reminds me personally of a story, you know, in a completely different space. But my day job is, I run a podcasting agency. I work with like technology companies, and we made a pivot away from our core business, which was doing video work only, like showing up with cameras and doing all that stuff, to being a podcast agency in like late 2019. And then in 2020, everything shuts down and every company under the sun wanted to launch a podcast.
Yeah.
So for some of us, the pandemic was a little bit more financially beneficial than others. Obviously, I don't wish it on anybody ever again, but I did see myself, you know, kind of a similar situation where sometimes timing is just right. And you know, I remember those 2018, 2019 days of being in cards and trying to secure boxes. Where did you really see your boom in card brokers when people really started to feel like this was something that they were going to want to do?
I mean, it was, I feel like it all happened. Topps Project was the big thing. That's really where we boomed. So boomed and fell, obviously. But there was points where, obviously, looking back, and we knew at the time, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that a product can sit for those of you who don't know what Topps Project is, I think it was available for 2 days. You would buy, it was print to order. So you could order, I mean, 50 million people bought one, they'd make 50 million of them. And 2 days after they'd sell out, you'd buy them for like $19.99. But if you bought in bulk, they'd give you like a discount. Maybe it's like $13 per instead of $20 per if you bought a bunch of them. You'd buy them for $13 per, they'd sell out 2 days later. Anybody could have bought them, but they'd sell out and then sell for $100 a piece. And or $500. Some would sell for $1,000 a piece. And it was just like, why is this happening? But everybody was okay. I mean, people were buying, especially in card brokers. I mean, you'd spend it's thousands and thousands of dollars per card. Knowing that, like, you know, we were intelligent about it, letting people know, like, yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's gonna crash. It is a pyramid scheme at the end of the day. But it's like, make the money while you can, sell while you can, and see what happens. And then it all fell down with a Griffey Shore Topps Project card. That's a classic. I had to keep one of those just to remember. But
I actually just sent this week. I finally sent all of my remaining Project 2020 cards to DC87. I was like, I had my own Griffey Shores that I still held because I bought, like everybody else, I bought like 50 Griffey Shores.
Yeah.
I think it sold just a hair short of 100,000 copies.
Yeah. Which was a little bit ridiculous, but it was the weirdest time. Like, cause everybody knows it's dropping and it's like, it sold for $13 and people would regret not buying it. And then they'd buy it for $50 a piece. And, you know, $13 into $50 for a product that you can buy unlimited amounts of is amazing. But it got crazier than that. I mean, what was the original? There's like the first few Topps Project cards were selling for, I believe, over $1,000.
Well, you could buy at one point, I think the Trout or the Ermsey Trout.
The Ermsey Trout. That's what I was thinking.
Was selling for, so it's an art version of Trout's rookie card, right? So Project 2020 was all like remade by these like pop culture artists like Blake Jameson, who's big in the hobby, and some other folks, Ben Baller, what have you. And they all did their take on these, you know, iconic rookie cards, Bob Gibson, Sandy Koufax, whatever, Willie Mays. And the irony was you could buy the Ermsey Trout base, not like, because I think they only had what, the one of one, and there were there artist proofs you could buy?
There was like the artist proofs to 20 that released online, but that's a separate thing. It's first come, first serve. And like you had to have monitors like card brokers and stuff to be able to secure those. Yeah.
Right. But all I'm saying is the Ermsey Trout base. So there was the artist proof and then there was the one of one. That was it. There are no other parallels.
Nope.
The Ermsey Trout base raw, I guess, because it comes in like a one touch, was selling for more than the raw actual Trout rookie card.
Yeah.
Which is just in theory, when you could buy unlimited amounts of it, it's like, you know, you look at it from like a simple economic standpoint, you're like, this makes zero sense.
Yeah. And everybody knew it, but everybody in the hobby pretty much was buying it because it's like, you can't look at $13 and then selling it for $100 the next day and just try to ignore it and be like, well, I want to make $10,000 tomorrow buying $13 cards and selling them for 20x. So everybody was doing it, and then it all fell down.
We're all just still chasing the Project 2020 high, really. We're all trying to get in early on things still so that we don't miss, what was it? I think the first card was Ichiro.
Yeah. Ichiro. Yeah, I feel like that was the first one. And I know it's sold.
Was it Ichiro? It wasn't Ichiro Baller, was it?
Who
was
I don't the, think so. Was the I was just trying one? To think of that. I haven't thought about Project 2020 in so long. I don't know.
We're all trying to be there when the next Ichiro first Project 2020 card comes out, and I want to buy 10,000 of them. So I'm the guy holding the 10,000 of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a wild time.
That was a great time. So that, back to what we were saying, that was pretty much like the boom where people were like, wow, there's people that are making six figures off of sports cards. Or, you know, some people made like seven figures off. I don't know how much people made off that stuff. It was unreal amounts of money, just depending on how much you wanted to spend. But then at the same time after that, it was fine for that to die because we moved right into, I believe it would have been 2019 basketball products and stuff. So we were had, I don't know the timeline complete. It was all around the same time, I believe. So there was 2019 basketball, and then, which was huge, Zion and Ja was such a big deal. You were buying blasters for $20, selling them for
$80.
It
was the same time frame. So Prism 2019-20, which was the first product of the boom.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Like the first one that was like going for insane amounts of money for retail boxes. And that, I believe, came out in like October or November. Prism comes out much later now.
Yeah.
But I believe that came out in like October or November 2019. So we're like 3 months ahead of the COVID shutdown when that happened. And then everything turned into gold. Like you could touch anything. And it was, I mean, we were selling Prism, collegiate Prism boxes for like a 3X markup.
Oh, it didn't matter what it was. You were buying it. And so, like Walmart, that was the Walmart shelves era. People sitting at Walmarts for days, which people liked to make fun of. But if I'm a guy who wants to make some extra money, and you could literally buy 10 Prism Blasters at Walmart and profit over 1,000. I mean, you could clear out Walmarts and make $2,500 off clearing out one Walmart store. Like people are obviously going to sit there and wait all day. Like it was just such a crazy time in the hobby.
And for me, like, and see, I think sometimes it's overstated, like the people who kind of throw shade at the people who do these kinds of things. Because like, let's take like me for an example. Like I was in my early 30s when this happened. I'm probably like 30, 31 years old. So I actually, a lot of times I wasn't selling the boxes. And you know this because we would talk about it via DM. I'm like, what are you ripping? Like, and you and I are like ripping Topps flagship products. Any basketball I was ripping to grade. And I waited, I wasn't like every day, I have a job, but like I would get a heads up from one of my buddies, like, hey, I think they're stocking today at Target. And yo, I wanted to go over there.
Yeah, obviously.
And wait. And I, you know, and then I think for me, it was like 2020 NFL Prism.
Yep.
At one point when a lot of the lines were happening and things like that and people waiting around. And yeah, man, like I wanted to chase Herbert and Burrow. Like it was fun. And then I would rip to grade. And if I could pull a silver Herbert, I mean, at that time, a silver Herbert, I mean, was insane.
Yeah. No.
It was still do well.
Crazy time. Yeah. So that was fun. So the boom went on for a while of just, and then haven't even got into like the amount of products that are being secured with bots. As for card brokers isn't a bot or anything like that. Because a lot of the card world, I think it's confused by what a bot necessarily is. So a bot pretty much secures product. A bot is a whole bunch of people, not actual people, but people buying a product on a website at once. Like, and you can run hundreds of what's called task or people or whatever you want to call it. And buying these massive amounts of product early on. And people would secure, there could be one person that bought thousands of boxes. And which is, when you look back at it, some of the craziest money ever made, because they're making 5X on some of these retail products.
Yeah.
And I mean, the evictions, maybe 60 yeah, grand.
Yeah, like Prism basketball.
Yeah, like that. Prism football.
It was like $20 at first, yeah. I think. And they were selling for, I mean, I think at one point, like 150.
150. And you could buy, and Target would go drop 100,000 of the boxes.
Yeah.
On the website. So it was just like, I mean, everybody, you can be all as mad as you want at them. Anybody's going to try to make as much money as they can, because that's just the way the free economy works. And that's the way people work. You want to make money. And then not everybody's in it for money. That's the other thing about card brokers. And this time, especially, I mean, we're definitely split. We still are to this day, and we're back then, you know, people like you want cards for retail because you like cards. You may want to flip a few boxes. A lot of people do that too. They flip a few boxes, keep the other ones to rip themselves, or maybe they want to only rip, or maybe they want to only sell and make money. Card brokers catered to everybody and still does. And it's definitely like a wide range of people, wide range of ages too. But it was in the past, like, it's obviously not near the same as it used to be. But at the time, it was just everybody was winning in card brokers because everybody wants to have the best chance to secure limited sports cards.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, there's definitely a misconception about what bots are versus what is it that's alerts? What's the term used for
like pings?
The server?
Ping notifications.
Yeah, pings, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, like I can assure you there were no bots, or maybe there were ways to get bots.
Yeah.
But I was in there manually. at 6:30 in the morning when I would get the notification that Prism, you know, you'd send out a mass notification. Hey, guys, I think Prism's going to be posting this morning. And so, you know, I get my coffee at like 6:15. I think, what was it? Like a lot of times they like posted like right before 7 o'clock Eastern time.
That was terrible because then like people on the West Coast got screwed over. Like,
I can't even imagine having to be up at 4 o'clock. I think that would have been my limit.
Yeah. Like, well, and then like, if
for me, it was like, I could do it before work.
Yeah.
Like I could get my coffee a little bit early, sit down on my computer. And yeah, I mean, I'm refreshing. I'm trying to add to cart. There was no bot. All I was told with card brokers was, hey, we think it's going live, you know, at these times, maybe that's our hope. And then
monitors,
you know, here's a link. Monitors. There's the word.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's up to me to be on target, be logged in, have my payment information ready to go and try to add to cart. And for me, you know, did I look at it from the moral dilemma of I'm a collector and is this right for the hobby? Of course I did. You know, I think most people probably did think that are collectors that are in card brokers. And you're like, okay, so here's my options. I have to pay a 5x markup for the toys I want.
Yeah.
Or I play ball. And for me, it was an easy decision. I'm like, I want to open some stuff. I want to open some Prism. I want to open some Topps Chrome baseball that I know otherwise I'm going to have to pay 5x for. So, you know, I found my peace with it pretty quickly when you look at what I would have had to pay to open the stuff that I wanted to open.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in the same dilemma as you. They didn't feel that it was right necessarily, but it's kind of just the way, I mean, it's the way things go sometimes. You either adapt or you don't. So you kind of just had to go with it. And speaking about monitors, that's something big that Card Brokers does that we haven't really talked much about. And that's pretty much how we secure. It's not like we're just telling people. A lot of times we did have early information on when Target was going to release and stuff. But pretty much a monitor is something that scrapes a website repeatedly for data. And whenever a product goes live or is loaded on the website, it sends a notification to Card Brokers instantly, which is pretty much the main reason people are in Card Brokers for the most part. They want to have that monitor because it's quicker than, you know, there's some Twitter accounts and stuff that'll post when a product's live, but they're not going to be near. They load through links quicker. Everything's way quicker through a monitor and it'll send instantly when the product's live. So everybody can just sit in the Target monitor channel, whatever website monitor, and have notifications set up. And as soon as the product's live on the website, you have an instant link to the product, instant link to the checkout button. We have guides on how to automate it all. And check, you know, you were at the time in Target, I mean, you could check out a product by the time it's live, you could be checked out in 4 seconds. So that's kind of, and with a lot of the releases back then, they're selling out so quickly. It was all about being, you know, as quick as you possibly can.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I was trying to say earlier was, I think there is a misconception at the difference between bots and monitors where the bot is just, at my understanding, you probably know better than I do, but it's set it and forget it. You basically set up your bot, pay a lot of money for it, and then your bot goes and acts as you would to go purchase the products, where the monitors, you're getting a notification, but you have to go do it yourself for the most part. That was my understanding, at least when I was doing this, which thankfully, and we'll get into shortly, you know, products are much more available now and easier to get if you're just looking to rip some stuff here and there. So let's go to that. You know, how is, you know, we see it now, right? A lot of these products sit on Topps website now, you know, you can go to target.com and you can buy cards now. So what is Card Brokers doing now? How does it look in there? I don't think I've been active or even checked out the Discord in probably over a year. So, you know, what's going on in Card Brokers these days?
Yeah, so nowadays Card Brokers is definitely weird. You know, we really had to sit down and think of a switch, obviously, because we can't just provide Target monitors and do this kind of stuff. You have to really think about what the next move is. So something we did for a while was we actually started doing more than cards. You know, we were reselling anything. You know, it's hard to provide examples. I mean, sure, Hot Wheels.
I got one. Yeah. That was going to be my example.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, I think my time here is off. It's when the Hot Wheels started getting flipped and I was like, you know, I think I'm good now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's Hot Wheels. There's some you buy for like $200, sell for $600.
I believe.
Yeah, which is crazy. So Hot Wheels concert tickets. Let's see what else we got. We got Funkos. You got shoes. You got literally everything. But we kind of realized that it was taking away. This was recently, but it was taken away from card brokers, what we really were, because a lot of people on card brokers are there for cards. You know, we are card brokers at the end of the day. So what we actually did recently, about a month ago, was we split into another company called Mako. I haven't released this to Twitter or anything. It's only for card brokers members for now until we really work on everything getting finalized. But launch a separate company, Mako, which is focused on selling on Amazon, like reselling Amazon FBA, pretty much just selling products on Amazon, and tickets, reselling concert tickets, which has been big lately. So we are focused on those two.
I'm sure you guys went nuts with Taylor Swift.
Yes, with Taylor Swift tickets, Morgan Wallen tickets, all that stuff. I mean, big money in it. So we put everything over to Mako and that. Card brokers is strictly cards now. And lately what we focused on is on, like, we have to come at it a lot of times is realizing that these members don't know about cards, you know? They're not like you and know how to grade a card in the first place. Or what to look for with grading. So something we've taken a big focus on is grading cards, especially now that prices are low again at PSA. Great money in grading cards. I've been grading a lot lately.
Yeah,
so
same.
We teaching a lot of people about that. I'll go out of my way and I'll be sending people links of card. I have a team on eBay all the time, always looking at cards, sending it to people to tell them to buy it pretty much. Instead of us buying it, we're having them buy it and make the money on it that we think's good. And then releases have actually been decent lately. Like we had a Topps update Chrome Sapphire, a monster release the other day that I think we're going to do amazing on. It sat in stock for almost an hour, secured a huge amount of boxes. All of us did. And they're now selling they were $130 retail, selling for about $220 right now, but $230. I think they're going to go up to like $300. I don't know if you've had a chance to really check out that product, but I think it's going to be.
And
it's going to be huge.
It's funny how this always works, right? The boxes will go up in value, but the base cards will go down in value.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean the Julio base is at like $500 or something.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah, sold for like $500. And there's no autos in it. All the big name
are they sticker?
Huh? No, I think they're on card.
Because in years past, the update Sapphire was sticker along with the update Megas. So I'll be curious to see that too.
I think I literally just posted one on Card Broker's Twitter yesterday, but I'm kind of forgetting if it was on card or not. But the checklist is really good compared to regular Sapphire.
Was Julio not in Sapphire because he had the short?
Yeah, he wasn't like in his auto is not in Sapphire or something, right? Or there's no autos in Sapphire. That's what it is.
This year, you're
right.
Yeah,
there's no auto. That's what I was. I couldn't think of it. There's no autos in Sapphire, but there is an update Sapphire. So, and regular Sapphire sells for $330 right now, and update Sapphire sells for $230.
Yeah.
So that's why
it's gonna be a great release.
I think it's gonna. You know, we're already looking at $100 profit a box for a product that sat in stock for an hour. Could buy. You know, I myself bought my fair share, about probably 250 boxers or so, which are sitting on my front porch right now. I gotta grab that after this call. But
thankfully, this isn't live.
Yeah,
that's
been a great release, and pretty much just focusing hard on any release we can. We look at Dutch auctions a lot on Panini. We look at another big thing we do is auction houses, PWCC, all golden, golden weekly auctions. Now we're gonna go, I think, hard on because, to be honest, golden auctions can go low sometimes. I feel like the weekly could go even lower. So trying to find steals for card brokers members on there that we think they can make money on. And yeah, pretty much just coming at it any possible way we can for squeezing out anything somebody would be interested in card brokers.
Yeah. It seems like it's still along the lines of the same kind of vision that you had had originally, which is that card brokers sells card information, right?
Yep.
And if you join card brokers, you're going to get this good information. And then you just need to make sure that your information is good that you're giving to people. Otherwise, they're not going to keep paying you to be in the Discord. But it sounds like that's still kind of what you're doing. And I think that goes to the misconception about what you are providing to collectors. And that is one of the questions that I wanted to ask you today was, how do you think, because there has not been a shortage of negative opinion on what it is that you do and card brokers does, but how do you think that card brokers has helped collectors?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And yeah, we do get a lot of, we get a fair share of negative hate, not as much as we used to. Early on card brokers, I was definitely getting my fair share of hate from all the main guys on Twitter too.
I got after you.
After me. Well, I don't want to call you straight out, but
I don't care. I'll stand behind what I say.
I can't remember what you said.
I know what it was.
Yeah.
Our buddy Nathan posted. He posted like an entire. I didn't know what card brokers did at the time.
Yeah. Right?
So like I didn't know really how it worked or anything, and Nathan posted an entire I don't even think the picture was his. I think it was just a troll.
Oh, it was a troll. Yeah.
But he posted like an entire trunk filled with just like racks of prism. And said, like, thanks, card brokers, and or something along those lines. And then I, like, quote tweeted it, and then I tagged Zach, and I was like, hey, man, like, I don't know what you guys think you're doing, but I assure you that you're pissing everybody off. And then you were like, that basically idiot. You didn't say idiot because you're a lot more, you have more tact than that on Twitter. But I knew that was the connotation, was like, hey, idiot, that's not even what we do. Like, you got, but there was no shortage of like, you guys were beating your chest out there a little bit. And it came with it that people were like, yo, I can't get the things that you're getting. So screw you guys. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I was one of those accounts at one point. I came around.
I'm happy to hear you came around. But no, I think that we help. I mean, a huge amount of card brokers. I think there's more collectors and card brokers than there is resellers, arguably. It's hard to say because a lot of people don't talk in card brokers. Like, you know, we have lots of members, but, you know, you may maybe have like 100 only that you see around all the time because a lot of them just use their information and that's it. So a lot of collectors still want to know what releases are going on. It's not that easy to always know what's releasing, when it's releasing. Stuff gets pushed around. They want to know what we think about certain products. Is it going to sell out? How much is it going to sell out for? What's resale going to be? They want access to buying the products, you know, stuff like that. They want access to learning more about cards. We offer all kinds of different services that I haven't talked about here. Like we've started card brokering lately, kind of a creative name, you know, card brokers, card brokering. But
see what you did there.
Yeah, well, it felt pretty smart. But we pretty much help people post their cards for sale in a marketplace on our Discord, which we have a pretty big marketplace. And I go out of my way and I have some other guys who pretty much take cards from there and we go post them around, reach out to people, try to sell it for them without them having to do anything. So it's completely hands off and we just help them sell it as part of their membership to card brokers. So there's a lot of different perks and we're not near as hated as we used to be, which I wish we were. It's a little bit fun being hated because being hated is generally good. It means people care about what's going on. Or you know what's the saying? It's like any publicity is good publicity, which it's kind of cliche to say that, but it's definitely the truth. Yeah, I'm always down for publicity.
Well, one of my favorite scenes from any movie, you know, I'm in this, my day job is podcasting. I started in college, I did radio and stuff. One of my favorite movies is Howard Stern's Private Parts. And so in Private Parts, there's this great scene with, I forget his name, famous actor. He hates Howard Stern. He's trying to get him shut down, turned off the air. And he's getting information on how long people listen to Howard Stern for. And the answer is the person giving him the information is like, the average listener listens to that loves Howard Stern listens to him for 45 minutes. And he's like, okay, what about the people who hate Howard Stern? How long are they listening to Howard Stern? And they're like, 3 hours. So, you know, when you have the haters out there, all of a sudden, how much you're being talked about, how much people are interested in what you are doing is, yeah. And honestly, I mean, I don't see card brokers being talked about nearly as much. The stuff's, we're able to get it. I think the value in what it sounds like what you're providing is, you know, at this stage, I don't really even know like what I should or shouldn't be buying. I don't really pay attention as much as I did. I think you're there for the people who want that information and who want to know like, hey, what should I have bought? You know, I see now for me, it's like everything sits on top site. So I kind of just don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. And I know there are people out there that do. And they're like, which one should I buy? Because it's going to sit and I could probably buy a bunch of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just you got to go at it from a completely new angle. And it's a lot more complicated nowadays than it used to be. You know, it used to be if there's sports card in the title of the listing, you buy it. It's like,
yeah. And then, but even like, a level deeper, let's say it still was like not peak time, but time when people were still excited. I mean, Sapphire was not sitting. Like, okay, you know, maybe five star is sitting, right? Yeah. Like we came out of that peak where you bought everything and maybe some things would sit, but not Sapphire. Like Sapphire was premium, gone in seconds. Like that was not waiting around. So, and I think that that is with lack of information. Otherwise, it sounds like it should have sold out upon release.
It should have, which I could talk a little bit about that release and what happened there. It should have sold out. Everybody knew 130 was a steal price because Topps is pricing everything high lately. In the past, they priced it at like 150 update, I believe. And lately they've been pricing their products at resale price or higher than, you know, market price to higher than market price. So we honestly had kind of low faith. We made our post before the release. We said when it was going to release, we said, we think it's going to drop at like $250. It came out before it released. We figured out that it was 130 and we're like, this is wild. We post and Twitter, you know, Topps Twitter, which is usually where they release their post information. They don't post about it for an hour. They post about it as it sells out an hour after the release. They literally posted it the same minute that it sold out. So no like collectors so much knew about it unless you were in a group or I don't know. Yeah, unless you somehow found out about it. There was no way to know, which is another card brokers is like some of these companies are terrible. Like why wouldn't Topps say releasing at 11 a.m. today is, you know, Topps update Sapphire.
Yeah.
You know, and then all the collectors know that. Okay, but there's no possible way to know unless you get on Topps website randomly at 11 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah,
It just doesn't happen. And so I think that was the major issue with it.
And that was how I came around on card brokers and I think being cool with, you know, the fact that I was using monitors to buy things during the boom was I really changed my tune on who I felt was to blame. I went from like the people who are cheating the system are to blame. And I would even argue that you're not really cheating the system, like someone with a bot may be cheating the system, but I'm not going to pass judgment neither here nor there. To it's really on the distributors, the Topps, the Fanatics, the Target to regulate how many boxes people can buy, whether or not they're going to have these waiting rooms that people have tried to implement. I mean, I've seen it enough at this point that I know that there are ways that these companies could mitigate and help with raffles and things like that. They just don't care.
Exactly.
And because they don't care, why am I to be punished and to say, okay, because Topps doesn't care or Target doesn't care or any of these companies, they don't care whether it gets all sold to Zach or spread around the hobby. They're like, I don't know, Zach's money's as green as if I sell to 75 people or I sell 75 boxes to Zach one time. We don't care as Topps. Well, if they don't care, then why am I supposed to care? And I think if people want to aim their frustration somewhere, they need to aim it at the companies that are saying that they don't care. And what's happening is collectors and people like you, I mean, you are a collector, and it's actually my next set of questions is to talk about some of the stuff that you collect. Collectors are finding ways around that so that they don't get left out in the cold. And so they're not the ones sitting there having to buy Top Sapphire update at 3-4x the price. So who are we really mad at here? And where should we be aiming blame if we're going to? That was kind of my internal justification.
No, that's
for why it was okay.
Yeah, I think so many people don't. They'd rather side with the multi-billion-dollar companies who just sit there and make, you know, print the products for nothing and sell it for the men. They're like, well, they think that they're going to blame the reseller who's making 20% because the company's too lazy to try to work around. I mean, they could hire the best developers out there, come up with great systems, and they just don't. I mean, like, yeah, they just don't
because
they don't. Yeah, and they've tried small stuff. But
we saw it with Ben Baller release 2 that Topps ran a raffle. It worked great.
You're right. You're right. And it's aggravating for resellers.
It's aggravating for you.
Yeah.
But for me, that would be the perfect scenario.
Yep.
Every single product gets put to a raffle and I know resellers will hate this, but as a collector, it would be perfect for me. Hey, every like big product, we run a raffle, certain people win, and then you get your boxes. Anything left over, we'll put in our Top store if we don't have enough raffle tickets that people wanted to put in. And it worked. My guess is that was a headache for them. And they're like, dude, I don't care. Let's just put it on the website. It'll sell out.
Yeah.
And we move on to the next product. Couldn't care less. That's my guess as to what happened. The raffles are a pain in the ass.
Yeah, sorry about that. But there's one more issue with raffles is you can bots do well on raffles. You got to learn how to block out bots from raffles. So bots can mass enter emails into raffles. I mean, bots can mass. Oh, and by the way, I do use bots sometimes and stuff. I'm not like anti. And Cardbreakers members use bots. Just to make this clear, we're not like not trying to put bots into a separate section than us. We are affiliated with bots. But they can mass enter emails. So during that release, I don't know if it worked. I feel like it's called filtering through emails, you know, filtering out real emails. And I'm not knowledgeable enough on that side of things to know how they filter through the emails. But pretty much bots can enter 100,000 TOPS accounts without issue.
Yeah, and TOPS would have to secure a cybersecurity company,
yep.
Which is very, very common. And they would have to secure a cybersecurity company and pay for it because they care about their consumers. And they would have to find ways to fight off the bots.
Yeah.
And they don't care. That's the bottom line.
Ticketmaster, for example.
That's an expense.
Go ahead. Oh.
No, I would say that's an expense for them.
Yeah.
So they're just like, mad.
Yeah.
Just be mad. I don't know. Like that's their solution is, I don't know, just be mad then.
Yeah. Like Ticketmaster, for example, for tickets, you have to have a real phone number. Like virtual phone numbers don't really work. So you have to have physical phones to make accounts for the most part. So that would be, and they have it down pat. So like that's a company, for example. Also, it's illegal to bot tickets. So that's probably not a good idea in the first place. But as for like making a bunch of accounts, you can't even hardly do it with Ticketmaster because you need real phone numbers. So that would be like an example of a company that does filter out from certain people securing a whole bunch of tickets compared to something like TOPS. They do make it easy oftentimes.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, look, I used a raffle as an example. I'm not an expert here on the way. I'm not an expert on any of this.
Yeah.
And so I'm definitely not an expert on the way to combat a thing that I don't even know that much about. But I do know that there are solutions out there for this kind of thing where you can, I mean, there are, you know, counter cybersecurity is the solution that you, and they have them for all different segments, whether it's cybersecurity for banks or cybersecurity for, you know, attaining retail products. There are companies out there that do specifically that. And my guess is TOPS is just like, you guys just buy it anyway. So like, why would we take on an expense to slow down the sale of our stuff?
Yep.
Doesn't make sense.
I agree. No.
And that's just a lack of care for your consumer.
That's all it is. But no billion-dollar company cares about their consumers. I mean, when it comes down to it, they like to think that, I mean, like Target used to act. Do you remember when Target used to act like they hated resellers? It's funny. They were banning resellers from the stores and stuff as they're like making, you know, tens of billions of dollars a year. They're like trying to put on this little show that they hate card resellers, and everybody's siding with Target. Like, yeah, let's go $100 billion company. screw the reseller who makes $10,000 a year. It's just like, it's funny times.
All right. Let's pivot a little bit. I did want to just ask you one thing. The show is called Good Sellers. After all, I want to just talk about you're collecting as well and selling. You know, I know when you first started grading and selling, you know, you were in that, I think the first thing that we talked about were like buying the complete sets of 2019, like as many as we could find in the world and grading all of them. But then I know you went a little bit away from that, at least from your collection standpoint, towards vintage. And I just wanted to talk briefly about that, you know, why you decided that vintage was something that you were interested in.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I actually collected vintage baseball. I assume because of my dad liked vintage baseball. So like 50s, 60s baseball, that's what I would collect. But I wasn't like collecting Mickey Mantle. You know, he's not cheap for an 8-year-old kid. So I was collecting, you know, like a junker 1968 card. And maybe, you know, maybe I'd save it for like a Roger Maris that's beat up. I could buy for like $15 or something. Stuff like that. So then during resale, when it comes to reselling, I buy whatever I can make money on, you know, how that is. At the time, it was sets. We were buying complete sets of Topps baseball, oftentimes pretty boring. Maybe complete sets of, there were some NBA products that you could, NBA premium, Hoops premium, Pulsar.
Hoops premium.
It's very classic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's, you know, all that stuff. And then as I started into cards and started making real money, I started like a nice vintage collection of baseball. It's still in and out. I collect... Collection-wise, it's only vintage baseball for me outside of WVU, West Virginia. So I collect like some of the WVU guys. We don't really ever have good players come from WVU. But when we do,
any you watch the Seahawks this year?
Okay, that is a rare exception. But yeah, guys, like, I have great Geno Smith cards. I have Steve Slayton, Javon Carter from, let's see who else. We have Miles McBride, who's
Tavon Austin.
Tavon Austin. I have a lot of Tavon Austin. All those. Pat White is a big one I collect a lot. Oh, yeah. So I collect that stuff. And then vintage.
Former Redskin.
Vintage baseball. Yeah, Pat White was huge and huge in college. Not so much NFL, but yeah.
We're Mountaineer fans as well. I was telling you before the recording started that my father-in-law, he's from West Virginia as well, went to WVU. So
nice.
I hear about it all the time. The difficulties of being a Mountaineer fan. So I know it well.
It's tough. We don't play well. We don't win. We beat TCU yesterday, which is a big deal in the basketball world for us. But in general, it is quite difficult to be a West Virginia fan. But
always good, never.
Always good, never great.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, that would be us. And what is nice is if you collect WVU, everybody who comes from WVU generally isn't very good. So it's there, you can buy their cards for cheap. So I have sick collections for cheap of some of the big names. So you got that going for you.
Awesome. All right, Zach. Well, I think this is a good spot to end. We're coming up on our time. I wanted to give you a chance to plug the different places that you sell, or you can tell people where they can find card brokers or just you yourself. Where should people go to find you?
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is at ZMED, ZMEAD. Card Brokers is at CardBrokers. And that's pretty much it. I'm on Instagram too. I have that link to my Twitter and Instagram, both my Twitter bios. But yeah, check us out there, and you can check out Card Brokers as well.
Awesome. Well, Zach, thanks again. I really appreciate you spending some time with me, and it was good having you on Good Sellers.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to Good Sellers. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow along wherever you get your favorite podcasts. To learn more about the hobby and how to sell your cards faster and easier, visit us at stacksales.io. We'll see you next time.